Our final session one speaker is adjunct Professor Tony Pietro Piccolo, co-chair for the WA Committee for Anti-Poverty Week 2022, director of Centrecare and founder of the Valuing Children Initiative. Tony is the director of Centrecare Incorporated, a position he has held for 33 years. He is passionate about the creation of a fair and just Australian society and one that respects and values children and young people. Tony has held several leadership positions in social services, both in state and national level. To name just some, he is a former president of the West Australian Council of Social Services and founding president and co-chair of the Community Employers WA. Nationally, Tony was a member of the Australian Council of Social Services Executive, vice president of Family Relationship Services Australia, a member of the Catholic Social Welfare Commission, the National Child Protection Foreman and the steering group of the National Coalition on Child Safety and Wellbeing. For his contribution to the community, Tony was appointed a member of the Order of Australia in the General Division AM 2012. He is currently an adjunct professor in the School of Arts and Sciences at the University of Notre Dame, Australia, Fremantle Campus. Please come to stage.
Good morning, everyone. It's so great to see so many people here today on such an important issue. Thank you, Governor, for spending so much time with us. Your interest is of great inspiration to us all and encouragement. But I'd like to acknowledge also the traditional owners of this land, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation, and pay my respects to their leaders, of which there are a few here today, and especially those who are past leaders, especially as much as the present and those that are emerging. I've entitled my talk today, "When is it okay to leave a child in poverty?" I'd like you to think about that as I go through this. And I'm going to race through it so I can get it done, because I've got a lot to say. We've heard just how many kids are in poverty from other speakers. We're talking about a significant number. 1 in 6, or 16.6% of Australian children live in poverty. It's well above the OECD average of 12.8%. 11 other countries have less than 10, Austria, Belgium, Czech Republic, Denmark, Finland, Hungary, Iceland, Ireland, and so on. Denmark and Finland, the poverty rate there is 4%. You've heard this morning from Kate that Food Bank's latest report shows 116,000 families have food insecurity, or children in food insecurity. And that's consistent with the understanding there's 100,000 children in WA that live in poverty. There's mounting evidence, and Francis points to a lot of this, of how poverty impacts on children's development and her or his future opportunities. The 2015 Australian Early Developmental Census showed that children living in poor circumstances were over 4 times more likely to be developmentally challenged than those living in better socioeconomic conditions. A lack of adequate nurture and insufficient protection and stimulation between birth and age 3 negatively impacts on brain development. The research evidence supports the view that poverty in the early years of a child's life has a greater developmental impact than for children who experience it at a later stage. Poor living conditions impacts negatively on a children's mental health, development of motor skills, and sense of security. The result of experiences largely created by poverty can have tragic long-term outcomes for many children who often face an adult life of poor educational achievement, unemployment, homelessness, and other personal problems. For some children, their poverty is a matter of life and death. In a paper published in 2005 by researchers Karen Zee and Richard Henry, and I quote, there is a growing body of literature both in Australia and internationally documenting the association between socioeconomic status and mortality, with disadvantaged groups experiencing higher death rates for most major causes of death at all ages, and mortality rates rising stepwise as children's level of disadvantage worsens. Entrenched poverty that continues for extended periods creates experiences that become habitual and difficult to escape, given the demonstrated negative impact of poverty on children, both in the short and long term. A strong case exists for minimising child poverty. Despite the mounting evidence of the extent of poverty in Australia and the significant impact this has on children, the response by successive Australian governments over the last 20 years has been imperceptible. In effect, the general thrust of Australian policy in this area has been to rewind the social benefits that had successfully reduced poverty before the 1990s. Before the mid-1990s. In the last decade alone, there have been a reduction in family tax benefit for many families at risk of poverty. Large numbers of single parents have been moved to job seeker, thereby substantially reducing their income. In 2017, family tax benefits rates were frozen for 2 years. An analysis by the Parliamentary Library for the current 47th Parliament confirms that real expenditure on family payments in 2020-21 is the same as it was in 2000 and 2001. This is even though there's been a 20% increase in the number of children aged 0 to 14 during that same period. Since the mid-1990s, the general position of Australian governments has been to largely ignore the issue of child poverty. This lack of focus on reducing poverty is not limited to the government, as it is rarely discussed in the broader society. Of the many social issues that are debated in Australia today, child poverty is rarely mentioned. Can you think of any time? It never receives the media or political attention on such issues as homelessness, domestic violence, housing, racism, gender bias, inequality, just to name a few. There are no rallies and protests to highlight its effects and to demand change. Have you seen any? So why are we so reluctant to address child poverty meaningfully and effectively in Australia? There's a myriad of reasons, but I'll just mention a few. The belief that child poverty is intractable. That is, you can't do anything about it, it's too hard, don't even try. There's the view that the poor are responsible for their poverty. If they just worked harder, it'd all be okay. Which releases both the government and governments and society of responsibility. There's the idea that incompetent, inconsiderate and lazy parents create child poverty. Such a view denies the reality that much of the poverty is caused by ill health, mental difficulties, disability and a myriad of life events. For example, just bushfires, floods, events outside of a person's control. There's the marginalisation and denigration of the poor through public discourse, media and political debate. The poor publicly shamed and as spendthrifts, dole bludgers, lazy, leaners. Such labels, too often used by some community and political leaders, form the view that such people don't deserve public sympathy or assistance. There's the concept of small government, for government to get out of people's way and not address the structural issues that create child poverty. The view that we can't afford it. Expenditure targeted towards alleviating deprivation is seen as a cost rather than an investment that reduces costs in the long term. And of course, there's a reality that most poverty is hidden, which reduces the general public's awareness and interest in its resolution. The outpouring of support by Australians towards those impacted by natural disasters or unexpected circumstances demonstrates that there is generosity, but it's less evident when it's towards strangers and when we speak of the poor in general. And of course, there's little political advantage to addressing child poverty, given the public's general disinterest and sympathy on the issue and the perceived electoral cost of any failed attempt to resolve it. People are still having a go at Hawke for not resolving child poverty, but I'll have a chat about that in a minute. So the Nation's Declaration of the Rights of the Child, those considerations partly provide an explanation as to why there is in Australia such little action to effectively deal with child poverty. However, given the negative impact that child poverty has on children, society cannot but take an interest in its resolution. So this raises a significant moral issue. On what grounds can leaving children in poverty be justified? The mental, physical and emotional needs of children in poverty cannot be consciously and conscientiously ignored. Children in poverty have a right to expect that just as with their physical health, their developmental and emotional well-being is safeguarded. Article 27 of the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of the Child expects signatories, of which Australia is one, by the way, and I quote, recognise the right of every child to a standard of living adequate for their child's physical, mental, spiritual, moral and social development. We're nowhere near that. The UN's concern for the protection of such rights is based on the self-evident vulnerability of children and their dependence on the actions of the adults in their lives. Children rely on their parents, community members and governments to provide for and protect them. They don't have the power or the means to provide for their own unmet needs. They are the innocent victims of their circumstance. Their parents and their society have a responsibility and a moral obligation to ensure their well-being. Discussions on child poverty necessarily need to include a challenging question on ethical principles and morality if such discussions are to have a humanitarian dimension. This may avoid limiting child poverty to issues of money and process. Jonathan Boston and Simon Chappell, in a book on poverty in New Zealand in 2014, wrote, and I quote, however we do the maths, ultimately the choice is a moral one. Is it ethically justifiable to let children suffer because of their parents' misfortune or misdeeds? Should we simply leave them to endure a particular fate? End of quote. It's difficult to argue that Australia doesn't have the financial means to deal with child poverty, given its undoubted wealth and position as one of the richest nations on the planet. Its gross domestic product in 2021 was estimated at $2.5 trillion. It's ranked by the World Bank as the 13th largest economy in the world. According to Credit Suisse's annual Global Wealth Report, Australia topped the global rankings for median wealth per adult at $442,000 per person. Australia's lack of a clear commitment to reducing child poverty is not just about affordability. Societal attitudes and values also contribute to the reasons why we have 700,000 children in poverty. The judgmental and dispassionate attitudes towards the poor and the increasing self-interest in Australian society are at the heart of the inaction. Child poverty is unlikely to be resolved in Australia while it is seen primarily as an economic and political issue devoid of moral considerations. This ethical dimension is an essential element of any serious discussion and debate and proposed action on child poverty. Ethical considerations lie at the heart of the political will that is so vital to effectively address child poverty. The significant funds and policies needed to deal with child poverty is largely dependent on the Australian parliamentary representatives. They are the only ones who have the power and the means to deal with child poverty effectively. And I already mentioned, over the past 20 years, we've done very little about it. The previous federal government stated in a submission to a Senate inquiry in Newstart, now we know it as JobKeeper, that its priority was, and I quote, to focus on strengthening the balance sheet and reducing debt. This makes the stress and suffering created by highly inadequate social benefits subservient to the government's budget concerns. This view of government wasn't prevalent when the former Prime Minister Bob Hawke committed his administration to better support struggling families. The Hawke Labor government reduced child poverty from 14% in 1983 to 8% in 1990. Child poverty can be reduced once we accept the reality that poverty is not simply the result of inadequate personality traits, but also from the organisation of society. Margaret Thatcher used to say, and she believed that poverty in the Western world was caused by a person's, and I quote, personality defect. An individualised view of poverty takes the burden for its resolution away from governments and diminishes collective responsibility. It also diminishes the structural aspects of poverty. It underplays the significance of tax systems, industrial and employment practices, education, the role of social supports and benefits, etc., etc. Poverty flourishes when societal structures work to enhance the material success of some while diminishing that of others. The increase of child poverty from 8% in 1990 to approximately 17% today suggests that the structural choices made over the three decades have contributed to this outcome. Those of us who are not poor have an obligation to ensure that our good fortune is not maintained through an economic and social system that is unfair and unjust. Australia is wealthy enough to minimise poverty while retaining a high standard of living for its citizens. Now, I better stop. But I just want to say, to end this, Australia cannot just leave it up to individuals and to parents. There is a societal responsibility as well. And to quote Boston and Chapel again, and I quote, children are owed a special care. This duty rests first and foremost with their parents and guardians, but it is also shaped by a society as a whole. There is a broader community agreement that all people, including children, are of equal moral worth and dignity. In the end, this is the point. Poverty causes harm to children that has a significant long-term outcome and at times even fatal consequences. There is a moral duty to respond and end the harm, especially since children are some of the most vulnerable in our society. Australia cannot avoid its responsibilities by claiming ignorance, blaming children's parents, asserting this unaffordable, or that there's not enough evidence. Such barriers are mere smoke screens used to justify the inaction that punishes children and demeans Australian society. Anti-Poverty Week's call to all parliamentarians to commit to halving child poverty by 2030 is realistic and achievable. Those who are serious about creating an Australia that significantly reduces with a reduced or no child poverty need to pursue courageously and tirelessly, whether singly or together, the creation of the attitudes, actions and political will necessary to achieve it. Thank you.